with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Monday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at the website, stevebick.com. Unbelievable. The weekend we all anticipated came off, and there is so many fascinating storylines coming out of the three big days across the country. And the cold weather didn't stop anybody or impact the Keeneland racing to any extent. And everything else that came in New York and California provided, for the most part, I suppose, and we'll have to discuss this along the way, the consistent, formful results on these big Saturdays. I mean, that I don't know how necessarily you change it, but you know, we spend so much time trying to figure out, you know, where we can go from a price standpoint, and I mean, it just feels like all winter and spring on particularly on the classic trail with the prep season, it feels like, you know, we try to figure out where we can find prices. Well, it hasn't, for the most part, been on the win end. That's not to say that there weren't, you know, there weren't upsets here and there, including in the Santa Anita Oaks, which is actually a really fun story. Expect to talk to Phil D'Amato later. But obviously the focus with Derby and Oaks, you know, now within reach, and with the fields firmed up considerably, there's some short strokes undoubtedly to get through, including the Lexington Saturday at Keeneland. But we've got a pretty good idea, and especially after a couple of anticipated withdrawals yesterday, and not to dwell or to focus on you know, the circumstances around Forbidden Kingdom and Classic Causeway, but it's a big part of, you know, putting the field together as we look toward Derby. Let's talk in anticipation of visits from, in this first hour anyway, Andy Beyer with his traditional, it's become annual. In fact, I wrote in response to something at my website at Derby Trail, Andy's annual post-prep visit. He's got Taiba specifically in mind, but there's plenty of other discussion points to talk about from a FIG standpoint. So Andy Beyer with a traditional Monday after the big April prep Saturday. And Gary Young, speaking of Taiba, Gary is at OBS yesterday, first day of the Bree Show. That'll go for 8 days and or 7 days and seven or eight in anticipation of the April sale next week. We're going to talk to Gary. Timing is perfect, actually. Looks like there'll be a Bree Show break right about 9:45. So we'll talk to Gary from Ocala in the wake of Amer Zidane's Taiba doing something so improbable in stretching out to a 9-furlong grade one victory. And of course, Gunrunner part of the story, but Zidane, as Jay Privman told you, and Jay, you know, Jay, I didn't think Jay had to you know, do a mea culpa, as he did a little bit afterwards, saying that, you know, he misjudged the Taiba's potential in this spot. But it was definitely Emre Zidane's call, and it was he who pushed to take the shot. And yes, it's a five-horse field, and yes, he'll have to do, deal with so much more in the Derby, but it's a, given the backdrop of everything going on out there and with Zidane, and I, this is obviously one of the stories that will dominate the lead up and into first Saturday. Mike Smith. What can you say about Mike Smith, who's had a quiet winter and then wins wins three of the stakes over the weekend? Because he also won yesterday in the Providencia and the yesterday the John Scheer, and in the Providencia too on Saturday for Bob S. But one of the stories, obviously, for Tim Yakteen, an amazing opportunity here the next 4 weeks, leading Taiba and Messier. Messier ran okay and certainly solid, but Taiba was the one of the really three eye-popping performances. That's one of the best parts of what went on Saturday, was that, and Friday, because let's fold in Nest's performance in the Ashland, because that was something. And Todd Pletcher, I sent Todd a note saying, it's your fault, you got to come back on, you got nobody to blame but yourself. with Todd taking home three big prizes, obviously. Mo Donegal, and a tremendous, a tremendously clever ride by Joel Rosario to win the Wood and deny early voting, and Chad from sweeping the Bluegrass and the Wood as Mo Donegal off the rail and collaring early voting, who ran courageously. And then came the unbelievable performance and ride from Flavian Pratt, and Zandon's just outstanding effort in the Bluegrass. And you put the three efforts together from Saturday, and you really got your money's worth. There's a lot to absorb about everything that went on in these three races. And, you know, the horses that are going to move forward out of it. Zandon, in a lot of ways, given how much, you know, how much seasoning and how nice his resume has, you know, essentially filled out. Zandon, and it's funny, I was talking to Marty McGee this morning. We've been pairing back and forth. And he made the point yesterday that he believes Zandon could ultimately go favored in the Derby and Epicenter as the second choice. Certainly the topic when it comes to, you know, how the Derby morning line and how the Derby pricing will shake out. It definitely got a bit of a kick in the pants on Saturday. And in fact, if you didn't see Marty's tweet with it, on the top of the line, Marty has got Zandon. He's got 4-1, Epicenter 5-1, Messier and Taiba 8-1. Mo Donegal and White Abario 10-1, Cyberknife 12-1, Charget, who needed one of those defections yesterday to forge into the field. I've got a whole separate thing that I noted at Derby Trail yesterday morning, kind of going through a lot of things, including the future wager. I was interested to see how the public bet it, and there's some real, there's some people holding future tickets, not just out of Saturday, but out of, you know, the last 4.5 months, that are got to be pretty excited. And that includes people that bet all others on Saturday who end up with Taiba at 18-1. Kind of interesting. The thing I'm referring to, by the way, is how, you know, how nice of an owner roster is shaping up. And for instance, I mean, Chargit getting in is going to give Mandy Pope, who's put so much in, it's going to get Mandy Pope into the Derby with Chargit. Speaking of lightly raised horses trying to do something improbable in the Derby, you know, Taiba said, "Hold my beer." quickly eclipsed. Chargit looks positively experienced by comparison now. there's a whole bunch of what I thought was amazing is how many individual owners are going to make it to Derby, as it turns out. Ron Winchell, of course, the Winchells, Joan and Ron Winchell, Jeff Drown. I mean, how great a story is this for, looking forward to talking to Chad Brown, for Jeff Drown to make it to Derby. He's had no shortage of success, but, you know, this is, you know, like Al Gold's story. Al Gold corresponds nicely in this same topic, right? Zidane, the now, obviously. Tammy Bobo with Simplification. Mike Mackin with the Lucky Seven. Smile Happy. Smile Happy ran okay. But everybody, you know, that's one of the things about Saturday. There's going to be some horses slightly dirtied up, you know, because of expectation. And that's one of the beauties of looking forward to Derby. The horses that, you know, last week we mentioned how Simplification, you know, gets sort of, you know, gets a little bit of smoky and obscured. And you could make that same conversation point about Smile Happy coming out of Saturday. Who else? Well, Morello had the bad start and never really got involved. And I haven't really, haven't sought out some, you know, some thoughts on from the Asmussen camp on Morello. So there's so much here to enjoy and to digest. For about 5 to 7 minutes away from having Andy, so let me give everybody. Let's first give you a rundown. So, you know, if you haven't, you know, for those of you that were busy through the weekend and you don't get a chance to gobble up every ounce of Derby Oaks conversation, here's the way things shake out. After Brian Lynch basically acknowledging what he told us on air last week, no way to go into Derby with Classic Causeway. So he and Forbidden Kingdom, who seems to felt like had a little bit of a breathing issue. And so Mandela steering clear, and really what I think contributed obviously to Forbidden Kingdom on Saturday, you know, those concerns about the distance limitations. And but it seemed like there was more, and the breathing topic that Mandela cited, they'll work on that and probably, you know, get him turned back. And there's plenty of horses on this, you know, that'll come out of this classic trail in that same vein. So here's what you've got right now. Epicenter ends up as the leading point getter. Zandon, White Abario, Mo Donegal off the big win, the Wood, Tis the Bomb, Cyberknife, Crown Pride, the Japanese, Taiba, Simplification, Smile Happy. There's your top 10 point getters. And then second 10, Slow Down Andy, Barber Road. Un Ojo should get an update from Ricky Corville on how he's making out. There's plenty of time after the incident last week that saw him need some stitching and having gotten bounced around in the Arkansas Derby. Early voting, and Chad was noncommittal about forging toward Derby. He's going to monitor the horse and the field and make a decision. Morello, Messier, Zosos, Summer is tomorrow, and as mentioned, Charge It In and Tawny Port sitting 20th with 40 points, and the last of five 40-point earners. Then comes the cut line, and there's five or six horses that have an interest in still getting in. Happy Jack sits 21st. Pioneer of Medina, Todd Pletcher saying that if he does get in, if he's got the way to get in, they would run. This for Sumaya, for Abu Ghazal. Grantham, have not heard a Grantham update, but Grantham with 21. And Rich Strike, and I've been in conversation and in contact with Eric Reed. They would love to get in with Rich Strike. And if they can't, they would target Preakness. So Rich Strike, 21. Rattle and Roll, 20. Ethereal Road fell short, 20. Bye Bye Bobby with 20 for Todd Fincher, who is running in the Lexington. And you know, Lexington, $400,000 purse. So 40 points is very important, because the 40 points that either you got a couple of candidates, because in due time for Kelly Breen, who ended up bypassing both of the Saturday opportunities in New York and Kentucky, if Bye Bye Bobby or In Due Time win the Lexington, that would get them to 40 points. And in terms of dollar earnings, dollar amounts, the $240,000 would push actually all the way to 17th, and it would push out Tawny Port. We'll talk to Brad Cox at about 10:40 this morning. Brad is considering Tawny Port seemingly to secure, you would think, any points. And it's not a big point race, obviously, 28, 4, and 2. But any placement by Tawny Port would, you know, get him 44 points would lock him in. So that's seemingly why they're considering a start in the Lexington with the Peachtree, John Ford's Tawny Port. But In Due Time would also would up or his earnings over 300, because once when you have the tie points, it then goes to non-restricted stakes earnings. So there's your snapshot. And on the Oaks front, the Oaks is going to be just unbelievable. It is hard not to be really excited about what's happening here. And Kathleen O, Echo Zulu, Nest with that tremendous effort Friday. Rapoli, Eclipse, and Michael House partnered on Nest, and what a comeback. I mean, really, Todd also did the same thing on Saturday with Wit. And Wit, I mean, just nabbing Highly Anticipated at the Wire in the Bayshore, also off the comeback. But Nest was tremendous. So Nest, Ugiri, Desert Dawn, the Arizona bred, what a great story. Nostalgic, who for Godolphin and Bill Mott, slight upset of Venti Valentine. I'll get back to this, but we'll talk to Mig about it in hour two. I did not like
the way I'm a big Venti Valentine fan. I did not like the way Manny Franco. I mean, granted, she's not necessarily a horse that wants to be on the lead, but if you're on the lead, use the speed and letting everybody stay within reach of you. I mean, watch how Luis Saez rides under a similar circumstance. So we'll get back to that. Secret Oath, Goddess of Fire, one of three for Todd. Todd's got Nest now, Goddess of Fire, and Shahama as well. But Turner Loose, Hidden Connection, Cocktail Moments, Candy Raid, and Shahama. There's your 14 for the Oaks. The Oaks is going to be just an absolute war. So there's your quick snapshot, and the rest of the weekend, hard not to. We've got to do a lot of things. With Brad Cox joining us later, we'll talk about Just One Time, who, of course, you got hip to from Brad weeks ago ahead of the win in Arkansas. There were two enormous efforts from older horses, obviously, Saturday. Speaker's Corner, who's just scary. A 114 buyer in the Carter, and we'll head to the Met as your favorite, to say the least, and Golden Pal, who's just throttles everybody. Golden Pal in the Shaker Town. Yikes. Unbelievable. There was also that Spenderella came back again, and Motion's obviously got a powder keg. She does whatever's necessary. Prevalence has sort of promised. How about the weekend Marty had handicapping? Jeez. Yesterday he had like six double-digit winners on that Keeneland card. Hermes being heard from. Brett Brinkman. And looking forward to reaching out to Brett. Scylla, she couldn't win the Madison, but she didn't. Certainly the barn had a fun time because Old Homestead blitzed that Lafayette on Friday. I made the comment, might forget to stop. Well, that's exactly what he did. So there you go. A few others. Charlie Baker, that glass ceiling in the Distaff Saturday. Outstanding. Christophe is running really well alive. Slipstream that wins the Palisades yesterday. City Man in that Danger's Hour. Got to get to Christophe. There's so much. Eddie Keneally down the hill. Brooke Marie. That was nice with Juan Hernandez. yesterday. How about my man? Siaka. Siaka and Louis Lazzanero. They claimed that Exotic West for $40,000. The racing office put out on Thursday, the racing office in New York puts out a note and says, the Top Flight Sunday coming up light. If anyone, you know, if anyone's interested, Gary said to Lou, they bounced it off each other. They enter Exotic West. She's won three straight. If you take away the ladies handicap where Dylan Davis got dropped, she's what a story. Wins the Top Flight. And I was thrilled for Louie and Gary yesterday. There was so much going on. That Matarea yesterday for Brad Cox. We'll talk to him about the Beaumont win. Grand Motion with Side Dog in the Transylvania on Friday. So there's the top line. All right, let's reach for Andy Beyer and get him going in here. And this is always one of our favorite early Derby conversations that we enjoy. And Andy's going to join us right now. Andy Beyer. And Andy, good morning. Andy, let me turn you up here a little bit. Do I have you? Let me see. All right, let's try this. Good morning. No, Andy?
Hello.
Yeah, I'm not sure why I'm not getting you through. Try it again.
Hello,
Wow. Oh, okay. Well, that explains everything. Andy, good morning. There we go. My technological abilities are modest. Andy, I build this as what's become an annual post-Derby prep visit, and there's plenty to absorb.
Well, this is a really interesting pre-Derby time. I thought that some of the things that happened on Saturday were just stunning and really worth talking about before the Derby.
Well, it's hard not to start out west because the improbability of this, I mean, Gunrunner is a story in himself, but as a stallion already, but this is fourth grade one winner in short order. But having this horse stretch out the way he did and go into the Derby with the potential to do something that, I mean, is just as potentially astounding as anything that's happened in Derby history.
Yeah, well, Taba is a freak. There's no doubt about it. I mean, when he won his debut at Santa Anita and got a speed figure of 103, I mean, that was the best by a first-time starter since 2005. So that was impressive enough. But to make the leap from a 6-furlong maiden race to a mile and an eighth grade one, you know, something that violates most of the tenets of good training, and to win it was just stunning. I mean, he got a speed figure of 102, which puts him even with Epicenter on the top of, you know, on the list of Derby contenders, and you know, it's you know, I think it's a fabulous story with a lot of elements, not the least of which is the the Bob Baffert factor here, but for reasons we'll talk about in the next few minutes, I'm not persuaded that this is a story that's going to have a happy ending.
Well, expand, Andy, and I mean, this is a lot to ask. Gary Young, who of course was involved in the acquisition and essentially is you know the principal consultant to Amir Zidane. This was Zidane's call, and he pushed for it. And certainly, you know, with a short field and you know, there's only so many opportunities at Grade Ones for 3-year-olds that come along. You can understand taking the shot, but there's, to be honest, I mean, the Derby Trail experience is pretty littered with horses whose, you know, career potential was stunted, you know, by too much too soon.
Right. So, as you know, I had a very long career as a turf rider during which I talked to and interviewed many of the most of the, you know, the great trainers in America from the late 1960s on. I mean, Alan Jerkins, Woody Stevens, Charlie Whittingham. And you ask them what's the most important thing in training. And to a man, almost, they would say patience. And to really good trainers, the cardinal rule that should never be violated is this: never ask a horse to do too much too soon.
Yeah.
You know, make sure that they've got the foundation, the experience, the proper preparation, you know, before you send them into battle. And this was obviously something that a maxim that was certainly violated on Saturday, and the circumstances I just found a little unsettling. I mean, Mirza Daniel consulted with, as you said, with Gary Young and with you know, the stand-in for Bob Baffert, Tim Yakteen, and I wouldn't be shocked if he talked to Baffert himself. And he, you know, as Zidane said, you know, that everybody advised him not to run. Well, you know, Zidane made the call, and you know, this is not the way you're supposed to operate a stable. I mean, the idea that your best talent around you, people know the game, you know, advise something, and you as the owner are saying, well, I own the horse, you know, you know, I'm a billionaire, I will do what I want. Well, I gotta tell you, if a Zidane or an owner had said to Woody Stevens or Alan Jurgens, I insist on running my horse in such and such a race, they would have said, please remove the horse from my barn by the end of the day. You know, you've got to have, you know, professionals making these calls. I mean, and the fact that, you know, and the fact that Zidane, you know, he was the owner of Medina Spirit. I mean, he could, you know, they're taking, you know, they disqualified the horse. They're taking the purse away. I mean, obviously he's frustrated. He wants redress, but you know, this, we don't play this game just to assuage the egos, you know, of billionaire horse owners. I mean, first of all, we're supposed to think about the horse. And, you know, I didn't expect David to, you know, to run the race that he did. I don't think on Saturday, I don't think anybody did. But now that, you know, he's done it, he's sort of like locked in on the route to the Kentucky Derby. Now he's got to go. And, you know, it's, you know, winning a six-horse field against a six-horse field at Santa Anita is a lot different from going against 20 at a mile and a quarter at Churchill Downs. This is just too much of a leap. And, you know, I think they're asking too much of the horse. And, you know, and not only that, I mean, forget winning and losing. You know, when you put horses in this position and ask them to do too much, they pay a price for it. I don't want to predict ill fortune for this brilliant horse, but I mean, this move does not ensure, you know, does not bode well for him having a long, productive career.
Well, and that, you know, that even was being, I won't say echoed, but that was being, you know, presented ahead of Saturday, let alone ahead of Derby.
Yeah.
So.
And, you know, that, you know, trainers get, you know, you owners and trainers get rewarded for patience. You know, I was just thinking about, you know, Baffert's horses over the years, and, you know, Arrogate was a horse, you know, who got off to a late start. He didn't run his first race till April, and, you know, Baffert raced him like four times in maiden and allowance races against, you know, minimal competition before, you know, he took him to the Traverse.
Yep.
And, you know, so now Arrogate had missed all this time. but now he had that foundation, and he was not being thrown to the wolves. He was starting with easy spots, getting experience. He proceeded to run the fastest figure by a three-year-old since we've been making figures, 122 in the Travers, won the Breeders' Cup Classic, won the Dubai World Cup, won $17 million. I think that's a pretty good reward for patience and restraint. Mr. Zidane should have shown some of the same.
It's a good point. I just pulled it up because it took him two starts to break his maiden. He debuted in April at Los Al, then broke his maiden in June at Santa Anita, came back 3 weeks later in an allowance, and then at Santa Anita, then an allowance at Del Mar before the Travers. And actually, the West Coast's PPs have a similar feel to them. I suppose, listen, Gary Young's going to follow you, Andy. So Gary will talk about the decision, and I suppose to some degree he's going to say, we spent $1.7 million on this horse, and this is what we spent the money on. And how do you argue, really?
You argue by saying in this business, if you really care,
yep.
If you care about your horses, the horse comes first, not the ego, not the owner's money, not the fact that he's a billionaire. You're thinking about what is best for Tapa, and this horse has the potential. Maybe premature to say now, but one of the best horses we've seen in a long, long time. Don't compromise him. Give him every chance. That's what the game wants.
Gary, Andy, who's the last, at top of your head, who's the last or most recent horse to debut with two triple-digit figs?
We've had a few less than that. There's a horse named Strike Power.
In
2017, who got a 102 plagiarist, got a figure of 104 in 2005. But we had some bigger ones than that in the past. In the modern day, when horses don't get cranked up, as much as they used to. I mean, this is quite impressive.
Well, and especially to do it, it's one thing, let's say, to debut at six and a half or seven, and then go to a mile or a mile and a 16th. I mean, to go from six. And, Ed, I did read, actually, Jay in his recap yesterday, Jay Pribman, wrote, who he was facing in terms of his stablemate Messier, and even to some extent Forbidden Kingdom. These horses are relatively lightly raced themselves. I mean, it's a small field, and there are not too many straws in their paths along the way. And that's why let's actually shift gears and include some of the other performances, because that's what made Zandon's performance so impressive under Flavian Pratt Saturday.
There's one more aspect to this story, which will,
sure.
Which will, I think the whole industry will be talking about pretty soon, and then, but that's the Baffert factor. I mean, the racing industry has kind of painted Baffert, it's like the incarnation of evil. Churchill Downs and the sport have cracked down on him for medication violations. That make him look like a real bad guy. guy. We know who the bad guys in the sport were. I mean, you know, Jorge Navarro, Jason Service. I mean, you know, guys who, you know, were using, you know, performance-enhancing drugs, and their horses were dropping dead. I mean, you know, Baffert was a guy who just kind of cut corners and tried to take an edge. But at any rate, his with the public, his reputation is mud, and the industry would love, I'm sure, just love to see him out of the picture. And now we've got a Baffert horse poised potentially to win the Derby, you know, and with Baffert kind of standing in the shadows, you know, while somebody that you know, the public has never heard of, Tim Yak Teen is putting the saddle on. It's just not a great scenario to advertise how vigilant racing is being, you know, protecting against illegal medications.
There's obviously two sides to fall on with that, Andy, which is, you know, one group is the most vocal critics are going to say, well, Baffert's had horses die just as readily, and you know, that the other side can say, well, since, you know, Breeders' Cup certainly last year and through now, no barn would seemingly be under more scrutiny, and so, you know, here's results in the face of that scrutiny. Certainly going into Breeders' Cup, nobody had, you know, was under more of a microscope and was having horses tested and supervised, you know, daily through, you know, through their performances. Suffice to say that it's complex, and I don't think anybody's mind on either side of this discussion is going to be assuaged or convinced in one direction or the other.
Well, I'm almost relieved that I'm not writing about your phrases anymore, because this is such a difficult issue. You know, that I mean, I think Baffert is the greatest trainer of my lifetime. I mean, you know, his performance is incredible, has been incredible. And the violations that he's gotten for are almost all, you know, for legal medications where, as with Medina Spirit, where, you know, too much of it wound up in the horse's system. I mean, I just don't see, you know, I don't see Baffert as a, he's no Navarro, you know, and I just wish he'd handled himself, you know, a little more gracefully, and I think that he was just always looking to take a little too much of an edge, and there were some definitely, you know, like dubious relationships, you know, with the people who were regulating him. But all things that said, I don't think he's a bad guy, and I don't think he should be the, you know, the poster boy for, you know, illegal behavior in racing. I just wish he had just been stayed quiet for a year and then gotten back to business.
Well, obviously this 90-day suspension gives the chance to, you know, with essentially the barn dispersed, Brissett and Yak Teen and Sean McCarthy. He's also promised what he promised ahead of, you know, Breeders' Cup over a year ago, the chance to have a comprehensive control system and supervisory vet that they promised to hire. I mean, if you do want to essentially cite, you know, barn supervision and, you know, lack of appropriate supervision and controls. They're obviously, if Baffert is going to earn back people's trust and confidence, it's going to have to be done, you know, in a completely, you know, transparent and obvious manner that people, you know, potentially could be convinced. But I mean, there is a large and vocal critical element out there that is not going to believe or accept any, you know, any success of any horse that came, you know, from or through his operation, and it's bad for the game, and it's in a lot of ways it's very sad, Andy, to me. I mean, it's and I think I can hear it from you, you know, having a similar view.
Yeah, I can bet you that Baffert, rather than disappearing into the shadows, will be one of the principal, you know, topics on the national telecast of the Kentucky Derby. And this, you know, this is, you know, this is certainly not what the industry wanted. But you know, when an ex-Baffert assistant is now taking over the training, I mean, most people, let's say many people in racing aren't going to kind of swallow that, you know, that Baffert is out of the picture.
Well, let me get some thoughts about some of the other performances. And in addition to the three-year-olds, Andy, like Mo Donegal's effort in New York and Zandon's, you know, broken field running in the Bluegrass, any thoughts about what we're seeing from Speaker's Corner, the 114, and then Golden Pal for Wesley Ward, who's just, he's got such an early, quick step that basically puts everybody on their heels. But, you know, here we are in April, a third of the way into the year. The older horses are absolutely, I think, sending out some, you know, some real signs of quality. We're going to have a very good season, I think, overall, if you look at the older horses.
Yeah, well, I love Wesley Ward as a trainer. I mean, I think he should be, one day he should be in the Hall of Fame just for being the guy who showed the world that American horses can go to Europe and win. And there's just nobody better at getting young horses revved up, to see on a wet Keeneland course, to see that horse go the first quarter in 20 and change. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And you know, Speaker's Corner just keeps winning. I mean, this figure of 114 certainly verifies that, you know, he's really an elite miler, at least. There's going to be plenty to cheer for in the in the coming months.
And back to the 3-year-olds, and as is always the case, Andy, it's very funny how this happens every winter. We get in January and February, and you know they're just sort of making the transition into their sophomorehood. And, you know, by the end of February, everybody's decrying the quality of the crop. Then all of a sudden, when we start getting to a mile and an eighth into March and April, suddenly things do morph. And, you know, now you look at triple digit, you know, type performances, Messier, Epicenter, Taba, you know, Forbidden Kingdom was knocking on the door. He may actually, you know, only want, you know, to go that not really a step past a mile and a 16th. Then even the filly, that Kathleen O with a 98 last week.
Yes, that was some performance.
She's terrific.
You know, interestingly, you know, for the second straight year, the the strength of the 3-year-olds, surprisingly, has been at the fairgrounds, and the Risen Star and the Louisiana Derby were solid races. I mean, Epicenter got a figure of 102 winning down there. I mean, and it's surprising to me, that Oaklawn has put so much money in their Triple Crown preps, and the Oaklawn racing has been a disappointment. And in this respect, and not nearly as strong as Louisiana, and that's where I'm going to be looking much harder, looking back, hard at those races to see if there, besides Epicenter, if there are some horses, maybe Zozos, who are a little under the radar screen, but I think there's some pretty good depth. But Gulfstream was a bit of a disappointment. I mean, the Aqueduct race on Saturday was a disappointment. Oaklawn, a little disappointing most of the year. So I think California and Louisiana are the places that to look for the the stars to come out of.
Well, I will mention on the New York front, we certainly have to acknowledge, and one of the emerging stories out of the season certainly goes back to the Remsen late fall, because the Remsen's been maligned for ages, and yet, here you've got one horse after another that kept coming back and performing, and the 1-2 finishers, of course, Mo Donegal and Zandon in December, they come back and they win the Bluegrass and the Wood.
Yeah, I thought Zandon looked good. I mean, he looks like a legitimate mile and a quarter horse. He's got Chad Brown as his trainer, so I mean he is certainly on the short list of contenders. But as a figure guy, I have to lean a little toward Epicenter because of that 102. But there a lot of them are quite bunched up there.
One of the other things I imagine you saw or heard about some of Randy Moss's thoughts, and he talked about the pace scenario that we've come to essentially deal with now in the modern Derby era, that the point system and Churchill's predilection for essentially for route goers and the elimination of pace. And one thing that did happen here over this weekend, Andy, with Forbidden Kingdom and Classic Causeway both falling away from the trail, some of that speed that everybody was talking about and horses interested in the front end, that took a little bit of a dent. And one thing that Epicenter's got going for him is he's shown the versatility in that Risen Star, and then coming in back with the Louisiana Derby, his ability to rate comfortably or take control, that bodes very well.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I had thought that that this could have been a hot pace year. I mean, like Forbidden Kingdom, when he ran his good race at Santa Anita, I mean, really showed a lot of speed. And now he's out of the picture, and. I don't want to prejudge this. You've got to sit down and look at the 20-horse field before making a decision on this. But Randy's point is certainly right, because the character of the Derby has changed so much from what we would call the groovy era. when you get one tearaway sprinter going a half and 45 or something like that. And for years, it just changed the complexion of the whole Derby. And now it's gotten pretty predictable.
Well, and they bunch up, and it's a difficult scenario. When we'll see an orb type that is able to literally pick off 17 or 18 horses. You're compromised essentially in this current, you know, incantation, the way that they've decided to. And it's funny, at the time when it happened, when they made this commitment and when the points went the direction they did as a system, I think a lot of us thought, oh, this is good. We want route goers. We don't want, we don't want Triniburgs and, Palace Malice was a weird deal, putting the blinkers and he was a runoff. At the time, I think we all thought it was a good idea. And I don't know. When we get to Churchill, we'll see if there's some thoughts about, how they're digesting this a decade now more of the point system, the way it's laid out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I kind of don't like the point system because there's so many every owner and trainer thinking about, oh, we got to get the points, and then you get some horse runs in 82, but he gets points, and we've earned our way to the Derby. Well, there are just a lot of horses who don't belong in the Derby, and that really should be the guidepost for people, rather than we're allowed to run in the Derby, so we have to run. Owners and trainers are not necessarily all that judicious when it comes to the first Saturday in May.
Well, Andy, as always, appreciate the frank commentary and giving us an early post prep season. We do have this Lexington to run, and it could put a horse in yet. But we'll check in with you Derby week. Then we'll have a better handle on what direction to go.
Well, good talking to you, Steve.
Andy Beyer, everybody. Okay. Andy, thank you. There it is, Andy Beyer. And, he says he's glad he's not a turf rider anymore, but, whenever he's got something that he wants to discuss, he's always willing to come on. So, always great to get Andy. Gary Young is going to join us. We're going to take the break here. Casey, let's take the top of the hour break, and so we can make this all work smoothly. Gary Young is joining us next, and Gary can address a lot of what just came up regarding Taba and the decision-making process and, why... If they did what they did, obviously they're not going to bypass Derby, but we'll let Gary talk about it and actually, if he's up to it, if he wants to, and maybe he wants to save it for Kentucky. But, it's been a very difficult calendar year in so many ways. Rich Migliori to follow, and then Brad Cox. And more. Stay with us. At the Races, recapping the huge weekend.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bannon.